Good evening, everyone. It's good to see everybody. I'd like to welcome everybody this evening to the services. I don't think we have any visitors this evening, but it's good to see you. I see some out here. It's good to see you. I want to thank everybody for coming here today. The church, the past year, has been having a list of men coming forward and presenting lessons, and I just want to thank all those men that have done so thus far, and we have a couple more months to go, so if you still want to volunteer to do that, the list is on the bulletin board. As you see on the board, on the screen, I'm going to do a lesson on complaining. What reason do I have to complain? I kind of wanted to give a little bit of background on this idea about complaining. This lesson's been in the work for like about 2 months. So I kind of had a personal issue that I kind of was interested in about complaining. And so I kind of dig more into it. And it's interesting how you focus on one thing and how you can see it more clearly in your own life. And I was thinking, because I noticed one time I complained and it didn't feel so good. And I think when it comes to complaining, it's easy to overlook complaining because it's so common in the world. I got an article in the lesson that it's by an author from the WebMD. You'd go to WebMD for some technical support for medical issues, but this article wasn't that much of a support because it was more, what's the right balance of complaining? So I thought it was kind of categorized it as being, it was one of those, it'd be funny if it weren't sad type of information that they try to put out to address people's complaining. The text for our lesson is in Philippians, but before we get there, I kind of wanted to talk about two verses in James. First one in James 3, verse 2. In chapter 3, James addresses the tongue, and it shows us the importance of the tongue by comparing it to a rudder, about fire, and what else? About the bit for a horse. Those items can control something larger. And then when it comes to the tongue, we have a lot of power, not only in our lives, but in the lives of other people, if we use the tongue properly to share the gospel with them so that they can hear the gospel, or to speak some kind of encouraging word. But unfortunately, too often, man usually goes to the opposite extreme to cut people down and not to build them up. And sometimes complaining can do that. In verse 2 it says, "For we all stumble in many ways, and if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body." The chapter 3 sort of begins talking about teaching that there shouldn't, that as James is referring to the other Jews, that there's a lot of responsibility a teacher has in sharing the truth, and if you maybe teach something that is not true, you may lead them astray. But I think what the good part of the chapter is talking about is the tongue in general, where there's a lot of responsibility in what we say. And I guess in chapter 3 also it says, "But for every kind of beast and bird and reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no man can tame the tongue. It is unruly evil, full of deadly poison." I don't think James is saying that it can't be done. The thing is, it's, you know, man has done these hard things, but sometimes, for some reason, he can't take control of himself. And I think as Christians, that's the challenge that we face. We need to be able to recognize what complaining is and understand how serious complaining is, because, as we'll see shortly, God is not happy with when we complain. And then I guess another verse in James is in chapter 1, verse 26. "If anyone thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his heart, this person's religion is worthless." In a part, as a Christian, our life reflects upon the gospel. So if someone should see us complaining, it doesn't do us any good to try to share them the gospel if we aren't living the truth. So we need to keep that in mind. Let's read now the text for our lesson in Philippians 2, 14 through 16. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now, not only in my presence, but more, much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Do all things without grumbling and disputing, or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God, without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain. So I wanted to focus on, I guess, verse 15, do all things without grumbling or disputing. That verse there, you can apply it to the preceding verses and or the following verses. God wants us to work out our salvation with fear and trembling, for it's God who works in us, without grumbling or disputing. You can also replace grumbling and say that he wants us to be doing his will willingly, without hesitation. A lot of times, if you look back in the Old Testament, the children of God, they were not willing, and they were very hesitant to follow God. And that's something that God wasn't pleased with. And then for the second part there, again, it goes back to the verse in chapter 1 of James, verse 26, about the gospel. We should, our lives, our conduct should reflect the truth which we live. And do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God, without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. This is the article I was mentioning about. I kind of don't want to go into it much because, like I said, it would be funny if it wasn't sad. I just point out a little bit about it, the top of it, the title of it, do you complain too much or not enough? So already there you see that complaining is okay. You just got to find the right balance. Later on in the article, the author says, you got to find someone that's receptive to complaining. And you can't take it for granted. You think that your complaining preempts or trumps other people's complainings. So her whole article kind of goes against what she's trying to propose. You know, so everybody here proposes that complaining is not good. But there's just a few things that I think are important that she touches, but other than that, most of her article is not really supportive of the truth. One of them is that right there you see highlighted, complaining is an integral part of most people's daily exchanges. I think in the world, people don't think twice about complaining about things. And she also goes on and says that there's a type of complaining, it's called impression management, where she says that if you're a business person and you're like a project manager and you have like 10 projects and you're really busy, it's good to gripe and complain about it because you're impressing other people. That's pretty sad. If you're impressed by someone's complaining, but if it was me, I would just think you're overworked and you're just kind of a baby or something. But the other thing that she brought out in her article, it kind of ties into what we talked about in our marriage ceremony back in April, the Love and Respect DVDs. In those DVDs, it talked about how men and women are different. Men listen with blue earphones, and they speak with blue megaphones, and they see with blue eyeglasses, and the same with the women. They have the pink corresponding devices. One of the five or six doctors or PhD people that this author, Hagar Scherer, she references, one of them says here that is corresponding to how people complain. Women complain differently than what men complain. She says there are two basic categories of complaints, instrumental and expressive. Instrumental complaints are goal-oriented, the meaning that we verbalize the problem in hopes in bringing about a change. And then there's a second one, expressive complaints have a different mission to let the speaker get something off her chest. So that's the division as far as basically why men and women complain, because they complain differently. My point is, that's fine, but both are complaining and both aren't acceptable in God's eyes. It doesn't matter why we complain. It's important to know that God's not happy with our showing our discontentment. And just another funny thing about this article in the next yellow highlighted area, this one doctor contributes our complaining back to our evolutionary ancestor, who complained about saber-toothed tiger attacking them. But I'll just stop right there. For the rest of the lesson, I'd like to talk to maybe define what complaining is. I'm sure we know, all know about it. We'll look at some New Testament examples, an Old Testament example, and then try to address, like Stephen did in the Psalms, the antidote to complaining. Here's four Greek words that are translated into murmur. Depending upon what translation you have, if you have the ESV, they usually use grumble. If you have the King James, it goes to murmur. If you have the New King James, it goes to complaint. But if we look at these four words, you can kind of put the pieces together and see what complaining, how it ties in, what it is. The first one, I kind of wanted to try to say the words, but I'm not going to try. The first word, you can see that there it says, to mutter, murmur, grumble, say anything in a low tone. And that's sort of what complaining, grumbling, and that is. When you say something in a low tone, you want to express your dissatisfaction about something, but you don't want to stand on the housetop and shout out loud. You want others to hear it, but not everybody. And that's sort of what complaining is about. In the scriptures that are listed in that first one, Matthew 20, verse 11, that's about the parable of the laborers in the vineyard, where the master goes out and goes and hires different laborers throughout the time of day. And at the end of the day, he starts from the one who worked the least amount of time to the one who worked the full day. And what happened is, the person that worked the full day, that bore the heat of the day, he was very upset. He murmured and complained to the master because he did all this work, that he wasn't paid more than his other ones that worked less but got the same pay. But the problem is, the gentleman, the master, he paid them what was promised them, and that was a handsome sum. And that's what was agreed upon. And of course, God, Jesus was using that parable to show God's graciousness to us, because he's going to treat us all equally, no matter how we've worked for him. And the other verses there, and basically in general, the Pharisees and the Jews murmured and complained about the disciples, Jesus' disciples, and Jesus, because they ate with sinners and publicans. And that's the gist of most of those scriptures, except for 1 Corinthians 10, verse 10, where Paul is referencing the Israelites when they complained and God destroyed some of them. The second word, we can see that sometimes complaining can take place within a crowd. It says here that to murmur through a whole crowd among themselves. It's always used of indignant complaining. Also, I wanted to highlight that too, about the indignant complaining. There's a strong attitude when it comes to complaining. When people complain, they have a feeling that, why are they doing that? It's more of like a very self-indignant disgust that they have towards somebody else's action, that why are they doing that? And that you see that in the next three had that same type of strong type of feeling of strong, indignant complaining. Let me see. I can't remember what those two verses were for. I'm sorry. But I'm pretty sure that goes back to them complaining about the disciples and Jesus. The third word there in Mark 14:5 has to do with Mary, who bought very expensive perfume to anoint Jesus in Mark 14:5. This word is only translated murmured in the King James Version. If you look in the ESV, it says scold. There's a very strong condemnation by the disciples when it's sort of unclear who complained initially, because if you look at the book of John, it says that Judas Iscariot said, well, this ointment could have been sold for a year's wages and given to the poor. And then the rest of the disciples murmured. Well, if you look at the other, again, translations, they scolded Mary for what she had done. But what, I better stop there. We're going to get back to that verse again down the road. Kind of let it out the bag here. And then the last word, in John 7, 12 and verse 32, there was a secret debate among the people. The text there was that Jesus, it was kind of avoiding going to Jerusalem because they were trying to kill him. And he was talking to his brothers, and his brothers were saying, because they didn't believe in him, why aren't you going down to the feast? If you want to be known openly, why don't you go down to the feast now and make yourself known? And Jesus said, my time is not now. You can go down. And so his brothers did go down, and Jesus did go down secretly. And the people were anticipating coming. And so they were, because they were also afraid of the Pharisees, they were afraid to be kicked out of the temple. They kind of had a secret debate among themselves because they were afraid to let everybody else know about it. So there was murmuring among the people about Jesus. And then in verse 32, the Pharisees heard them murmuring, and they were kind of being pushed to take Jesus alive because of what they were talking about, because they were uncomfortable with about what that they were saying. And then the last part of the number four, there was displeasure or complaining more privately and public concerning the Grecian Jewish converts against the Hebrews in Acts chapter 6 verse 1. We're going to look at that, so I won't comment on that. And our admonition here in Philippians 2 verse 14, which we just read, and also 1 Peter 4 9, it talks about hospitality, that we should show hospitality without murmuring or complaining. Here's the three examples which we're going to look at for our lesson this evening. The first one is Acts chapter 6. Go ahead and we're going to read that short scriptures there. Acts chapter 6. I'll read down to verse 5. Now in those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplying, there arose a complaint against the Hebrews by the Hellenists, because their widows were neglected in the daily distribution. Then the 12 summoned the multitude of the disciples and said, it is not desirable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Therefore, brethren, seek out from among you 7 men of good reputation, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business. But we will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the word. And the saying pleased the whole multitude, and they chose Stephen, a man full of faith in the Holy Spirit, and Philip, Procurus, Nicanor, Timon, Parmenas, and Nicholas, and a proselyte from Antioch. So there was a problem there at the church there in Jerusalem, because all the Jews were coming to Pentecost and then became Christians when Peter stood up and preached. So there was a large number of new Christians in that area, and the widows weren't being taken care of, as everybody knows. The problem was the way they went about trying to address the problem. Complaining or murmuring or griping or grumbling was sort of not the proper way to address it. And I think that's what happened here. Just because of what we see here, it says there arose a complaint. You know, typically murmuring, complaining, grumbling is done in a low sense, where you talk to somebody to the side and say, there's a problem here, we need to get this fixed. And I don't like it. But so it arose, and it came to the attention of the 12 apostles. I think if it would have been addressed properly, it wouldn't have been taken to them, because they said they're going to be about preaching the word and prayer. They're not going to be about serving tables. So it wasn't addressed properly. And that's something we need to do in our lives when it comes to whether it's the church, whether it's at work, or whether it's politics, you name it. We always have to address problems in the proper fashion to avoid complaining. And I think it goes to as far as how we are to live in this world, because we know this world is temporary and it's not perfect. So what we need to be able to, you know, we need to know what we can change and what we can't change, and let it all up to God. And I guess that can be tough. And also too, you got to take in consideration too, what happens if the problem doesn't get resolved? You know, what happened here in Jerusalem, that those other widows weren't taken care of? Do you continue to complain about it? You got to be careful about that. Let's go on to the next item there, the next example we have of complaining, and that's in Mark 14. Go ahead and turn to Mark 14. And I'll read 3 through 9. And being in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table of women, a woman came having an alabaster flask of very costly oil of spikenard. Then she broke the flask and poured it on his head. But there were some who were indignant among themselves and said, "Why was this fragrant oil wasted? For it might have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor." And they criticized her sharply. But Jesus said, "Let her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has done a good work for her. For you have the poor with you always, and whenever you wish, you may do them good. But me you do not always have. She has done what she could. She has come beforehand to anoint my body for burial. Assuredly I say to you, wherever this gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will also be told as a memorial to her." One of the things we need to do is when we interact with other people, sometimes people can do things that we may disagree with. Like you hear this story about Mary who had purchased this very expensive oil and anointed Jesus with it. The disciples were very, very, they were unpleased about that, what they did. I'm kind of boggled. I'd probably do the same thing. I may get upset about what somebody else did, but why? Who are we to control or judge or make a determination for what somebody else does? I guess that's my point. And I think sometimes when we complain, we don't really see the big picture. And I think you see that more when you go back to the Old Testament, where the people of Israel were traveling through the wilderness. They really missed the big picture, totally. We're going to look at that a little bit later on. And I think that's what the disciples do, and that's what we do when we have a critical heart, when we may look at other people and judge them harshly as far as what the decisions they have made. In James 5, verse 9, I'd like to read that. James 5, 9 says, "Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door." That word grumble, it's not the same word that is being used for my lesson. That word grumble is basically groan. We're not even supposed to groan at one another and grumble at somebody, to complain about somebody. We're not supposed to groan. It's saying the judge is standing at the door. I think it's kind of referring to what back in the Old Testament, where a lot of times when the Israelites were complaining, God heard their complaining. So we need to be careful in what we do in our lives when it comes to communicating with other people. Go ahead and turn to John chapter 6. We'll look at that third example. John chapter 6. In John chapter 6, Jesus had, earlier, he had fed the 5,000 people, and they, of course, they thought he was a prophet because of this great miracle they did, but then they started trying to follow him, to pursue him. First off, they tried to make him king, and when he found out they were trying to make him king, he kind of left the area, but they continued to try to follow him. And then when they finally did find him again, they kind of played coy and say, "Where'd you go?" And Jesus knew why they were seeking him. They were seeking him because of the food. And of course, Jesus probably wasn't too happy about that. But, let's see here. Of course, Jesus tried to tell him, "Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him." So he was using the idea of food to teach them to work for the food that endures. Of course, and then he goes on to say that "I am the bread of life." And what he was teaching them was sort of getting difficult for them to understand. He was telling them, "Unless you eat the Son of Man, eat the flesh of the Son of Man, and partake of him, you will not have life." So they started to grumble about this. They didn't understand it. It didn't fit their concept of what they knew about Jesus. They knew that he was the son of Joseph. They knew he was from Galilee. So they didn't believe he was from Bethlehem. They didn't believe he was the Christ. And so they grumbled about that. A lot of times when we first become a Christian, we may not understand the truth. So we instead of grumbling against the truth, we need to spend time trying to understand what God's trying to, the message he's trying to give to us. And that's why I put these the verses here as far as in 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy. I know when I first came to Christian, I had some strange ideas about latter-day times and prophecy of Daniel and all these other things that were not true. You know, I could have said, well, that's not true what they're teaching me. I believe this stuff. We have to be flexible that we need to receive the truth, because we may not have the understanding that clearly demonstrate what the truth is. Go ahead, turn with you, if you'd like, to 1 Timothy 4. And this is Paul's instruction to Timothy, of course. Till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Do not neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by prophecy, which with the laying on the hand of the eldership. Meditate on these things, give yourself entirely to them, and that your progress may be evident to all. Take heed to yourself and to the doctrine. Continue then, for in doing this, you will save both yourself and those who hear you. And then 2 Timothy 2:15. Be diligent to present yourself approved of God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And coming to understand, if you're a new convert coming out of the world, coming from a different denomination, it's going to take time to get a large picture of the truth, because we only learn the truth in small amounts as time goes on anyway. So it's going to take time and prayer and study to have a better understanding. Now we're going to look at the example in the Old Testament about the complaining in the Old Testament. I think it would be a good lesson just to go over the entire time that they were wandering in the wilderness and complaining, but I just couldn't put my hands around it to put it on this PowerPoint slide to be able to present it. That's why I didn't do it. Amazing, though. It's amazing how God used their negative experiences, which they were going through. To give the Israelites credit, they were going through difficult times. God was doing that to test them, to see what they were made of. So it wasn't an easy thing that they had to go through. What would happen, what would you think, if suddenly your diet was changed for some reason? You were forced to eat a certain way. You know, I know Brother Lee was here. He only could eat, a cup of food at a time. And I just think how difficult that would have been to really enjoy food. You know, Americans, they enjoy food. And that's something Brother Lee, he couldn't do anymore. So they went through some hard times. And I just wonder if some small thing of Americans had to endure, how they would complain. I think one of the things I thought about when I first was in the military, I think people think it's a right. They have a right to complain. But we don't. Let me read 1 Corinthians 10 through 12. Of course, this is talking about, Paul is reminding the Corinthians. Of course, the Corinthians had different problems. They were taking one another to the law. They had somebody that was, married to their mother-in-law. They had different issues. And here Paul is reminding them of what the Israelites went through, so they would have a reminder of what they shouldn't do about murmuring. In verse 10 it says, "Nor complain as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now all these things have happened to them as examples, and they were written for admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall." Paul earlier says that God was not pleased with the Israelites, because some of them fell back then. Go ahead and turn to Numbers chapter 16. Numbers you ever did a good study about the book of Numbers, you'll see that the Israelites, what they were doing as they traveled to the promised land, their complaining got more aggressive and more hostile, and the rebellion got more violent. And complaining, griping, and grumbling is sort of like, to me, it's like the first symptom of rebellion, because it's, you're expressing your displeasure with something. In chapter 16, well, in the beginning of the chapter, we see Korah, Dathan, Abiram, and the other 250 leaders, and they were very upset because, you know, Korah, he was a Kohathite, part of the tribe of Levi, and his duties weren't very prestigious. So I think he was saying, well, he said, everybody in the tribe, in the nation of Israel, was holy. So he thought he could take upon himself and take upon those roles which God alone did not give him. And so, you know, Moses, I believe on the instruction of God, said, okay, the next day, tomorrow, you're going to take incense, and we're gathering around from the temple, and we're going to see who God's going to choose. And of course, what happened is, God opened the ground up and swallowed Korah and his families and his people, and then fire came down and destroyed the 250 leaders. But the very next day, and that's where we come in chapter 16, verses 41 through 50, and I'll read. Excuse me, pardon me. On the next day, all the congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of the Lord." Now it happened when the congregation had gathered against Moses and Aaron that they turned toward the tabernacle of meeting, and suddenly the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Then Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of meeting, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Get away from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." And they fell on their faces. So Moses said to Aaron, "Take a censer and put fire in it from the altar, and put incense on it, and take it quickly to the congregation to make atonement for them, for the wrath has gone out from the Lord. The plague has begun." Then Aaron took it as Moses commanded and ran into the midst of the assembly, and already the plague had begun among the people. So he put in the incense and made atonement for the people, and he stood between the dead and the living, so the plague was stopped. Now those who died in the plague were 14,700, besides those who died in the Korah incident. So Aaron returned to Moses at the door of the tabernacle, for the plague had stopped. Here we see that it gets the Israelites complaining, and they didn't, again, understand what God was doing there. He already destroyed Korah, Dathan, Abiram, and those 250 leaders because they weren't authorized to approach the temple to do service, to make intercession for the people. And here the people believe Moses had killed them. How could they believe Moses had killed them? They were sympathetic of the people that were killed. And they, of course, they murmured against Moses, and they were actually murmuring against God, because ultimately it's God that they were complaining against. The Hebrew word that in the Old Testament is for complaining is loom or murmur. And it has two different meanings to it. The first meaning is to lodge, stop over, pass the night, abide. And then the second part is about to grumble, complain, and murmur. It's interesting, it seems that they might have been stuck in the murmuring and grumble mode. They were lodged on it, and they couldn't stop complaining because they just couldn't see anything good what was going on in their ordeal. In this slide here, I was trying to contrast of what their attitude was as far as complaining and what they should have been doing instead of complaining. If you recall back when the people of Israel, when they crossed the Red Sea, they sang a song. They should have been singing songs all the way there because of what God was doing for them. Now let me read this here. God heard their cry in Egypt. God remembered his covenant with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. God selected and sent Moses, a humble man, to lead them. God destroyed the Egyptians' livestock, crops, and army before their eyes. God afflicted the Egyptians with suffering and death with the plagues. God belittled Egypt's false gods with his mighty miracles and signs. God plundered the Egyptians' wealth and gave it to the Israelites. God delivered them out of slavery. God fed them with manna from heaven and quail and water. God protected them from their enemies. God was giving them his laws that they might live. God made his presence known to them, and they saw his mighty works. God was giving them houses that they did not have to build. God was giving them vineyards that they did not have to plant. God dwelt among them and led them to the promised land. God had mercy on them and did not consume them in his anger. Many of these sentences that we see here, we could just easily rewrite them, apply it to us today. You know, God dwelt among us. God said he would always be with us. God is giving us his word that we could live. God has forgiven us. His mercy is renewed daily. Now, part of my lesson is we're going to just talk about the, I guess, the remedy or the cure for as far as complaining. And things we need to, I guess, focus on. That is one of the issue that rises of complaining is discontentment. And there's four verses there that talks about being content with necessities, being content with what we have, being content with our lot in life, and being content with God's way. Go ahead and first turn to 1 Timothy 6. First Timothy 6, 7 through 8. Now, godliness with contentment is great gain, but we brought nothing into this world, and then certainly we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. I think as far as our life, food and clothing, that's a very simple things that we should be looking at as far as being satisfied with. And of course, Paul is telling them that that's where it should start, our contentment. And I think when we have godliness, when God is in our life, when God gives us direction in our decisions, what we do, and we have contentment, we gain a great deal if we just focus on the simple things of life, what God does for us. With this economic crisis that's been going on, I kind of think a lot about food and clothing and how people's lives are being changed. And I think people are being forced to reevaluate their priorities in life. And I think it's never a wrong thing to look at that as far as what's important in life. Go ahead and turn to Hebrews 13. Hebrews 13, 5 and 6. Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with what things. Be content with such things as you have, for he himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not fear what man can do to me. And this goes again along with what we said earlier about the food and clothing. You know, a lot of times we look at ourselves as Americans and there's like a 1 in 300 chance that we've been born in America. And the rest of the world, they are either trying to get here or don't like us. They don't like us for different reasons, but they want to get here because we are very, very fortunate. And I think one of the problems as far as being our country being blessed so much is because we've been living beyond our means financially. So there's a check out there that needs to be paid. That's something that is something to be aware of. Go ahead and turn to Philippians 4, chapter 11. And Paul, we're going to talk about Paul a little bit after this slide here. But Paul, he was a really good example in many ways. Here he says, not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. Paul had suffered a lot for the gospel. And he kind of relied on a lot of the other brethren for support financially. And sometimes it didn't come when he may have wanted it. So he had to learn that to make do with what he had. But he was very appreciative of what support he did get. And you see that in the book of Philippians. I think he talks about later on that you didn't have the opportunity, but now you do. So he's very thankful for that. Go ahead and turn to Luke chapter 5. One of the interesting things about doing this lesson was seeing the different examples of complaining in the Bible. We normally don't look at the Bible and say, is this person complaining or is this person complaining? But I think it's kind of interesting to do that. And this is one of the things I had to talk to my wife and family and see what they thought about this. Luke 5, 4 through 6. Now, when Jesus had stopped speaking, he said to Simon, "Launch out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch." But Simon answered and said to him, "Master, we have toiled all night and have caught nothing. Nevertheless, at your word, I will let down the net." When it comes to as far as how we could be content and not complain is, we need to be content with what God wants for us. Not have these preconceived ideas of, well, this didn't work. Why should I try it again? Here, Simon Peter, he was probably up all night, fishing, out in the weather, pulling in these heavy nets, casting them out, rowing out to shore, out to the lake, and then rowing back in. And after all that work, Jesus said, go ahead and cast out the net and make a catch. I think it was complaining. If you look at it, if you consider, like, if you have children and you want them to do something you say, you don't want them to say, well, I cleaned my room up 3 days ago. I'm kind of tired. I'd like to take a nap right now. You wouldn't look at that as something really good. But I think Peter was complaining, but we need to learn as Christians that we need to put God first and look to him and not have preconceived ideas of what works and what's right. Look to God. For time's sake, I'm going to apologize. I'm going to skip to the next slide. This is my last slide. And it goes back to where we started at. And, of course, you see the question on there. If Paul had no reason to complain, should we? In the book of Philippians, it's known as one of the prison letters that Paul had written. And you would have known it that he was on death row because of the way he did, the way he said things in that. You know, all the negative things he could have maybe mentioned, he saw the positive things, like him being there emboldened the other disciples to be more bold with the gospel, to preach. Him being there caused the guards to see that he was not being there imprisoned to because he was being tried or anything. His imprisonment was in Christ, in the change, in serving God. That's where his allegiance was. That's where he was bound to. And there's other things too. So if Paul had no reason to complain, why should we? And this evening, in closing, I'd like us to consider where are we at as far as working out our salvation with fear and trembling? Do we have the proper attitude that we should have in serving God? If you're not a Christian, this lesson hasn't been really geared towards you. But you may have been thinking about the Bible, about God's Word, about judgment, about the future, about tomorrow. Things that you have no control over. For any reason, if you are anyway subject to the invitation this evening, we're here to help you. Don't hesitate to come forward as we stand and sing this song.